Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast, where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. This week is a little different because my guest is you, the listener. That's right, this is our 100th episode extravaganza. Pew, pew. Those are fireworks or something, I don't know. And as you may recall, I put a call out on Twitter to have people submit questions and comments and even upload audio asking a question or a comment. And many people did. Now, before we jump into the questions and the comments, I want to say a word of thanks to some people. Thank you, Jason Snell, for hosting the Random Trek podcast on your incomparable network. Without Jason, this podcast would have never happened because I emailed Jason randomly, an idea for this show. And he said, oh, I think that's a pretty good idea. And then I let, 8 or 9 months go by. Jason prodded me occasionally. And without that prodding, I wouldn't have eventually had the gumption to do this podcast. And now 100 episodes have gone by, and perhaps Jason is feeling sorry for prodding me into it. But he did, and now I'm not stopping. I still have something like 600 more episodes to go. So I'm here for the long haul, people. You can't get rid of me. Well, I suppose you could get rid of me, just delete Random Trek for your podcast app of choice. But don't do that. The other people I would like to thank are you, the people who are listening. It's funny because when you do a podcast, well, at least speaking for myself, you don't imagine that anyone will actually listen. So even after 100 episodes, I didn't really think anyone was listening to this podcast. I just thought it would be fun to talk about Star Trek with a variety of people and spout my nonsensical opinions over and over again. But it turns out people actually listen, so I appreciate that. And I know this because many people answered the call to submit questions and comments and even upload audio comments. Let's just jump into some questions from the internet, shall we? The first group are less questions, more comments, so let's go through those. Amos NP at Amos NP on Twitter says, my favorite episode has to be the one with your mom. What a fun, quirky, sweet conversation. Well, thanks a lot. That's probably my favorite episode as well. Many people who listen to this podcast know that my mom died not too long ago. It's kind of a bummer. It's not that's underselling it. I'm very glad that I had the chance to sit down with her and make her watch an episode of Voyager and then talk about it. And I found out some things about her that I didn't know, that was great. And it also kind of proved she knew I did this podcast. She always thought that I did it live, which was, I tried to keep telling her, no, I release an episode on Thursday, but that doesn't mean I have to do it on Thursday. I do it ahead of time, which seemed to blow her mind. So it was nice to have her as part of this project because she knew about it, but she didn't really understand it. And I think she probably thought that maybe I was just making it up, but she was just humoring me. So that was a special moment for me, and so I appreciate that comment. Thank you very much. Patrick Felon, at Patrick Roswell, says, comment, everything great about DS9's later seasons happened first in Babylon 5. I'll lend Random Trek the box set. Still love Star Trek 2. So here's the thing. I don't know anything about Babylon 5. I watched one or two episodes. I know Chekhov shows up. I know Bruce Boxleitner is on it. And that's about it. So it's one of those things where I've been meaning to give it another try. I tried to watch it. I didn't like it. But I only watched a couple episodes. So we'll see. In my copious spare time, maybe I'll start watching Babylon 5 again. Probably not. Bobby Parati at Rotzo on Twitter says, how about a crowdfunding campaign for a bridge crew member on an episode? The more money raised, the cooler the officer. Well, first off, it's kind of a little judgmental about, ranking people, giving people monetary value is not a very Star Trek-y of you. But here's the thing that I don't know if people know. Jason Snell calls this the Roddenberry rule, and that's that I don't want to have anyone on the show who is actually kind of actively involved in Star Trek in one way or another. Because let's face it, sometimes I say some not so nice things about Star Trek, and I wouldn't want to put anyone in a position to embarrass themselves or talk poorly about something that they worked on. So that's not going to happen. It's a fun idea, but there's not. There are plenty of Star Trek podcasts out there who have Star Trek related people on them all the time. If that's what you want, you should go listen to it. I don't think I'm going to get Patrick Stewart to come on and talk about a random episode of Enterprise, and I'll tell him how much I dislike Scott Bakula. That might put him in a bit of a bind. Not that I dislike Scott Bakula. Scott Bakula, if you're listening, which you are more, almost certainly not listening, I think you're a fine actor, and I'm sure you're a lovely man, and you have nice skin. Jonathan Poley, at The Other John, says, if you were told to create a new Trek series, what would it be like? So that's an interesting question. Also, a question, let's face it, that this will never happen. I will never find myself in this situation because I am not in, as the kids call it, the biz. But, you know, it's a hypothetical. So I think that I would take a page from HBO's success and from the Game of Thrones success and kind of have a Star Trek Game of Thrones. Now, what does that mean? What is the greatest thing about the Game of Thrones if you watch it? It is the epic scope of the thing, the sweeping epic nature. And that's what I want. I want a galaxy-spanning story that involves lots of characters and all kinds of things. And I think it would be even interesting if it were probably 10 episodes in a season telling one overarching story, but in different seasons, and every season would give you a different perspective. So you would get the Federation perspective one season, maybe the Klingons perspective the next season, that kind of thing. I don't know if that would make good television, but I would watch it. All right, let's go to our first listener-submitted audio question.
Hi, Scott. This is listener Andrew Z. How has your opinion of Star Trek evolved since you started the podcast? And is there a specific discussion that has shaped your opinion more than any other? I have a bonus question. What are the essential elements of Star Trek? Could there ever be a TV show that's a Star Trek comedy or something like a police procedural? Probably, but what would have to be included for it to still be Star Trek?
The first part of Andrew's question is very similar to a question I got on Twitter from Dan Dersh. I don't know if that's how you say his last name, sorry. And of course, his Twitter handle is at Dan Dersh, so I've said it wrong twice. If that's if that isn't how you say it, it's how you say it now. Congratulations. How has your opinion on the different series changed as you've randomly watched good and not good episodes from each? Well, it's interesting. I think I've said this before, that when I started this project, I got a lot of Voyager episodes, and that made me nervous because I stopped watching Voyager as it was being broadcast on the TV. Yes, there was a time when you could not binge watch things, people, and I just gave up on it because I didn't like it, and so I was dreading watching Voyager again because I just didn't like it. I liked it more than Enterprise, but still, having rewatched it and being forced to rewatch episodes for this project of mine, I found that I like Voyager. I mean, I should say, I say I don't like certain things of Star Trek. I like all Star Trek. All Star Trek is good. All Star Trek is generally enjoyable. But I like all the series. I like Voyager a lot more than I did before I started Random Trek. And, you know, I'm gaining a begrudging like of Enterprise as well, despite that show's many efforts to not make me like it. And now for Andrew's other question about what makes Star Trek Star Trek, it's an interesting question because I think a lot of people, especially when the J.J. Abrams movies came out, especially Star Trek Into Darkness, they said that's not Star Trek. And I don't know if there is a single thing that sums up Star Trek or makes something Star Trekky. It's kind of like that old chestnut about, I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it. I can't define Star Trek, but I know it when I see it. But I think the one thing for me that sums up Star Trek is that it is generally optimistic. But you could still, and then I know what you're saying, but hey, Scott, you say you like Deep Space Nine so much that you want to marry it, but that's not a super optimistic show. I think that you can tell dark stories and show characters having conflict and going through things and doing things that perhaps you don't agree with, but still have an optimistic tone. And I think at its best, that's what Star Trek does. It makes you optimistic for the future. It makes you see that people can handle themselves in difficult situations and still uphold their morals and ideals, even if you don't agree with the decisions that they make to uphold those morals and ideals. You can understand their reasoning behind it. And that's the other thing, too, right? Star Trek is so much about characters and interactions. It's, you know, people discount science fiction in general because it's, you know, spaceships and aliens and laser guns, right? But that's discounting a whole genre for very little reason. When you look at it, science fiction, and Star Trek especially, uses the science fictional lens to cast a critical eye on current society. So Star Trek has a long history of looking at things that are in culture and commenting on them and criticizing them and showing us that the future will be better than what it is presently. And I mean, there are countless anyone who's listening to this podcast can name countless examples of when Star Trek has used a thinly veiled species or race of people to stand in for something in society. And since we're on the topic of me being in charge of Star Trek series, or having Q-like powers to change existing series, as is the scenario put forth by listener Matt Godin, who is at Golgotha Space on Twitter. I don't know what that means, but I'm sure there's a reason behind that handle. And this is coming from a man who calls himself Blank Baby on the internet, so no judgment. How would you have changed a Trek series? Voyager as Peter F. Hamilton cyberpunk, crew adopting 7 of 9 implants and unable to adjust to Earth on their return, continue off as their own collective. Oh, that's interesting. I find it interesting that you consider Peter F. Hamilton cyberpunk, that I would not think Peter F. Hamilton is cyberpunk. I think of him as space opera, but that's neither here nor there. Check out Peter F. Hamilton's books, though. They're great. So how would I change a Star Trek series? I like your idea of Voyager adapting the Borg implants. One of the finest two-parters in all of Star Trek history, I believe, is Year of Hell, which is a fantastic two-part episode of Voyager that posits, that shows the ship going through a year of hell. And I feel like Voyager could have been that the entire time. I think that Voyager could have been Battlestar Galactica before Battlestar Galactica was Battlestar Galactica. And I'm talking about the reboot, not the original Battlestar Galactica, because the original Battlestar Galactica was on before Voyager, so it couldn't have been that before. And I feel like that's a missed opportunity. And of course, people might say, hey, but then that wouldn't have been optimistic. But once again, I think you can tell a dark story and still have a vein of optimism running through it. And so I think they had that in Voyager because Captain Janeway knew that she was going to get her crew home. And, of course, spoiler alert, she does. So that's how I would change Voyager. I don't know if it would work. It was, once again, not a TV executive, not a professional, just a guy with a microphone. But if I had to change one, I'd change Voyager. Well, I guess now this imaginary power is going to my head because I just thought of another change I would do. Enterprise. I would tell Scott Bakula that Captain Archer doesn't have to be a boring buffoon. Well, maybe Captain Archer is not a buffoon, but he's certainly boring. And I would tell Captain, or Scott Bakula, make him a little charming there, Scott. You know, quantum leap this business, and see what he did with that. Entry/millennial at Nougat Machine on Twitter, which I think perhaps is now my new favorite Twitter handle, because I love nougat and I love machines. So I'm just imagining a machine that, I guess poops out nougat. I don't know. I don't know why it has to poop out nougat. Do I have to put the explicit tag on this? I don't know. Somebody help me here. Anyway, his question or her question is, does/will the randomly selected episode ever influence guest choice? Oh, so we should throw back the curtain and show you the inner workings of how random Random Trek is. Now, so Random Trek is totally random. The episode selection is totally random. I identify a guest before I select the episode, so the episode selection has never prompted me to invite a certain person on. I ask a person on, and then they randomly get an episode. Now, I will say, for some people, just let me tell you, don't send me letters. You don't know what my address is, so that would be hard. But don't tweet at me and get angry after I say what I'm about to say. Because remember, it's just a fun podcast. It's all right to have a little fun on podcasts. So I will sometimes limit the randomness to a series, a particular series, depending on the guest that I'm having. If I know, for example, that someone is crazy cuckoo pants for Voyager, I will limit it to Voyager. Likewise, if someone really wants to do an original series episode, they're really hard to get randomly because there are so few of them, so I will limit the selection to the original series, but it's still a random episode selected from a subset of the whole episode. So it's still, in spirit, the same thing. I feel like I should have a lawyer present to explain that everything's okay, but I think everything's okay, so... I hope that answers your question, and I hope you're still listening. Let's go to an audio question before I dig this hole any deeper.
Hi, Scott. I'm Carillion.
And I'm Miriam.
Miriam is my daughter, and she's 10 years old. I've always been a casual Star Trek fan, maybe a 4 on the McNulty scale. But the confluence of your podcast and my mother-in-law's thrift store find of almost all the seasons of The Next Generation and Voyager have moved me up to a 6, I think. Miriam likes to watch the occasional episode with me, too. So what do you think about Star Trek, Miriam?
I like it, and I think it's very imaginative, and some of the episodes can be very weird.
What have you watched?
I have watched a lot of Voyager and Darmok from The Next Generation.
Yes, we watched Darmok when we were studying the Epic of Gilgamesh. What do you think about Voyager?
Voyager is pretty good. My favorite character is Captain Janeway.
Okay, and why is she your favorite character?
Because she's pretty, and she's a woman, and the captain of the ship, and she's mostly a good leader.
She's a good leader. It's nice to see a pretty young woman being able to lead a starship.
Yep.
And lead a whole crew. Do you have any least favorite characters from Voyager?
Yes. Chakotay and Neelix.
Yeah. Why don't you like Neelix?
Because he's ugly and his girlfriend is way too pretty for him.
Yes, Kes and Neelix, that whole relationship is a little troubling, isn't it?
Yes, and Neelix is just kind of annoying.
Yeah, he is. Neelix is just pretty annoying. Well, thanks for talking with me and with Scott, Miriam.
You're welcome.
And Scott, thank you very much for all the fun we've had with Random Trek.
Miriam, you bring up many fine points about Voyager. Captain Janeway is a lovely looking lady. But I gotta say, I have many problems with Neelix, but him being too ugly for Kes is not high on the list. I will say Kes is more attractive, obviously, than Neelix, but beauty is only skin deep. The problem with Neelix is under the skin is just a lot, is a sack of annoying, so it doesn't work out. But thanks for the comment, and give Deep Space Nine a try. That's what I say. I'm assigning you, ask your mother-in-law to visit some thrift stores until she finds all of Deep Space Nine on DVDs, and then you guys can watch that. It's great. Or maybe get like a Netflix subscription. That's probably cheaper or easier to come by. I don't know. But let's go back to some Twitter questions. Paul T. S. Lee at Meteor Plum says, what's your feeling about including Galaxy Quest so the even odd for good bad Trek movie thing works out? So this is kind of a trope, I think, amongst the geekier set, that Galaxy Quest is a fantastic Star Trek movie. And I think that's true, but it is technically not a Star Trek movie, so I am not going to include it in Random Trek, especially since I think I'd have to include the animated series before I started including Galaxy Quest, and I'm not going to include the animated series. Sorry, people, it's not going to happen. We have another a question for Twitter. Actually, two people asked this very similar question. This is another one of those, if I had phenomenal cosmic power and I could do whatever I wanted with Star Trek kind of questions. Tim McGregor, at Tim McGregor on Twitter, doesn't really ask a question. He kind of commands me. Choose one character from each Star Trek series to form your ideal crew. Xana Ace at Xana Ace on Twitter, actually asked, if you could assemble a dream crew, but using one member from every show, who would be on it? See, she asked, Tim commanded. But either way, you're getting your answer. So both work. Xana did also use hashtag way to go, Scott. So points to her. So I had to give this some thought because you need a captain. So my first thought was, well, maybe I'll just pick all the captains because, except for Archer, because he's, as we've previously discussed, a dud. But then there's too many captains. You can only have one captain for the crew. And so for my captain pick, it's like a draft. Only I'm the only person doing it. Jason must be so excited. I pick Captain Picard from The Next Generation. I've talked about how I would not want to serve under Kirk because everybody who serves under Kirk dies. I respect Captain Picard. I feel like he cares about his crew, but he doesn't get too involved with their personal lives, unlike Captain Janeway. I think that Captain Janeway is probably much more empathetic, not even probably, but is totally more empathetic than Captain Picard. But I don't want that. It makes me uncomfortable. So I like Captain Picard's kind of standoffish. You know, he kind of, if you like Captain Picard's the kind of guy that doesn't want to give you a hug, he wants to either give you a firm handshake if he has to, or he would prefer to tilt his head at a respectable distance. And I respect that. Also, he doesn't want you to talk to him in the turbo lift, and I wouldn't want to talk to the captain in the turbo lift. So I feel like Captain Janeway would probably say, be like, hey, crewman McNulty, what's going on? And then I'd have to think of something. Like when I was growing up, I was raised Roman Catholic, and so I had to go to confession. And for people who aren't Roman Catholic and perhaps are unaware of what confession is you go into this booth and a priest is sitting in another booth and you're separated by a little screen and he pulls aside a panel and he says, you know, you say this little prayer, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been X number of days or months since my last confession. And then the priest says, you know, tell me your sins. And then you recite your deep, dark sins to the priest, and then he gives you a penance, and he says a prayer, and then you go off, and you usually kneel, at least in my church. You would have to kneel in front of a statue of the Mother Mary and say your prayers. That's what the penance was. You had to say X number of things, and I suppose the worse your sin was, the more penance you had to do. I felt like this was a forced social interaction, right? It's a little weird, though, because the priest in my parish, I had a small parish, so that I knew all the priests and they knew me, so it was weird to talk to someone. You think there's a little anonymity, but they totally know who you are. So you don't really want to tell them your sins because they know who you are, so you want to keep that stuff to yourself, man, especially when you're a little kid. And then we had a new priest who came in, and he decided, hey, let's get rid of the confessional booth, and we'll just be cool, and we'll do confession face-to-face. And I didn't like that. But anyway, my point was, telling you all this, is that it was a forced social interaction, and so what I would do is I would make up sins, because I could never think of what I had done wrong. And then the last sin is that I had lied, and then I would get absolved for all of them. And so, which, you know, I suppose one shouldn't be, that's kind of a Kirkian, I think, solution to the Kobayashi Maru that was my childhood confessionals. But my point is that that's how I would feel if I were trapped in a turbo lift with a captain who wanted to chat. I'd have to think of something to say. It would make me nervous, and then I'd say the wrong thing. So no Captain Janeway. I feel like Captain Sisko punches people a lot, and he's very intense. I don't need that intensity in my life. Captain Archer is way too, it's like, you know, he's hit the snooze button way too many times. So I don't want Captain Archer. So there you go. My Captain Picard. Oh, Captain, my Captain. So you need a captain. Every vessel needs a captain. You need a science officer. So clearly, if you're going to pick a science officer, it's got to be Spock. Am I right, people? So from the original series, I pick Spock. I mean, there are many great science officers, I suppose, T'Pol or Dax, the first Dax, not Esri, would be great choices. But Spock, you got to go with Spock. So you got your science officer, You got your captain. Now you need your doctor. Now this is another thing. I was tempted to draft a ship full of doctors because I feel like the medical people on these shows are great. So you've got the doctor from Voyager, who's one of my favorite characters. You've got Bones from the original series, also one of my favorite characters. You've got Julian Bashir, who is not one of my favorite characters, so he was not in the running. And you got, well, either Crusher or... Pulaski. I like Pulaski. This could be a controversial opinion, but I enjoy Pulaski. I like how she said data instead of data, kind of needling him. I know it annoyed people, but I liked her. But I'm going to have to pick, for my medical officer, Dr. Phlox, because Dr. Phlox is great. I love him. He's my favorite character on Enterprise. He's an actual good character. He's the most alien that we have seen in a recurring role on Star Trek, and he brings me nothing but delight. So you need a security officer, and you got some tough choices here, right? You've got Worf, you've got Tuvok, both fine choices. But I think if you're gonna secure a ship, you're gonna want Odo. He can shapeshift. He sleeps in a bucket, so he doesn't take up that much space. He's kind of, if you don't have Bones, you need a Krabby Pants McGee, and that's Odo for you. That's it. And then, of course, you need someone from Voyager, so you pick Seven of Nine, who is probably the best character on Voyager after Captain Janeway, but I already have a captain, and I can't imagine Captain Picard and Captain Janeway getting along on a ship together. So there you have it. That's my crew called from across the Star Trek universe. We've got Captain Picard at the helm. No, we don't. We've got Captain Picard as captain. Spock is probably his first officer and science officer. Odo covering security. Dr. Phlox down in sickbay. And Seven of Nine doing engineering, I suppose. And I guess they need a ship. They need to be on a ship, right? So I have to pick a ship. Nobody asked me that question. Actually, somebody did ask me what my favorite ship is. But I'm going to pick my favorite ship from the series. I think having all of those folks on the Defiant, which has a cloaking device, would be fun because they could sneak in and do stuff and leave. So there you go. They're all flying along the galaxy in the Defiant. Raising heck. Speaking of Enterprise, Gary Rogers at Gary Rogers on Twitter says, "Who's a good doggy?" and includes a picture of his beagle, and then says, "Or could Porthos be the best character on Enterprise?" I know I just said Phlox is the best character on Enterprise, and I think he is. Second best is Porthos, because he is super cute. So, he's good doggy. And so is your doggy. Eric Lombardo, at @ELombardo, asked a few questions, but his first question that I'm going to address is, what kind of Chipotle burrito would Chakotay order? Chakotay at Chipotle. Now, see, this is, sadly, Voyager came out before Chipotle was in business, because I think that is clearly brand synergy. It's amazing. Maybe we'll see. I can imagine the commercials with, "Hi, I'm Chakotay for Chipotle." And then you'd have the Chakotay-Chipotle combo meal. Eric is, of course, talking about perhaps the infamous episode of Random Trek, wherein I kept calling Chakotay Chipotle, which amuses me. So hopefully it amused the people who were listening. I like Chakotay. I like Chipotle. So nothing but something tells me that Chakotay would be a double chicken burrito man with the spicy salsa, light on the Swiss cheese. There is no Swiss cheese. Light on the sour cream, extra lettuce with black beans. I think that's the Chakotay Chipotle burrito, and probably on a whole wheat tortilla. Is Chakotay a vegetarian? I don't think he is. Nathan Mace calls in, really, he uploaded an audio file to Dropbox, but he calls in, so I'm going with him, with this question.
Hey, Scott, love the show. Just wanted to call in real quick. My question for the 100th episode is, if red shirts die from anything, and stormtroopers can't hit anything, who wins in a fight? Red shirts versus stormtroopers. Thanks. Keep up the good work.
Now this brings me back to many a misspent hour in my youth when I was arguing with a gentleman who I played D&D with as a kid about what would win a Star Destroyer or the Enterprise. And he was certain that a Star Destroyer would blow up the Enterprise, and I was certain that the Enterprise would win versus a Star Destroyer. Now, there are some caveats to that. So I think that just based on firepower, you've got the Star Destroyer, which has turbo lasers, and you've got and no shields, and you've got the Enterprise, which has shields that we know lasers cannot penetrate. And so if you're just shooting lasers at a shield, the Enterprise is going to shoot a couple photon torpedoes and blow up your Star Destroyer. Now, there are some complicating factors. If Darth Vader happens to be on the Star Destroyer, he has the Force. The Force is strong in that one, and he could force choke Captain Picard or Captain Kirk, and that would complicate things. Also, if the Star Destroyer decided to disgorge any number of TIE fighters, I believe that the TIE fighters would overwhelm the Enterprise's targeting computers and eventually just become kamikazes and destroy the Enterprise. But if you're just saying Star Destroyer versus Enterprise, my money's on Enterprise. Of course, that's not the question that Nathan asked. That's the question I answered. But to answer Nathan's question, once again, my money's on the red shirts because stormtroopers can't hit anything. Red shirts can hit something. So I feel like they would mow down the stormtroopers, and then probably as they were walking off into the sunset for the victory, they would trip over a rock and die. But they would still win. Everybody would be dead. But we would know in our hearts of hearts that the red shirts won. At this point in the 100th episode, it seems appropriate to thank our sponsor, who is Casper. Now, you all know that Casper is a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress sold directly to customers. That's right, you don't have to go into those creepy mattress stores, deal with salesmen who are on commission, and inflating prices. The Casper mattress has an award-winning sleep surface, which was developed in-house. They have a warehouse full of mattress engineers who do this thing. And the mattress has a sleek design, and it's delivered from the internet to your house in a small box that makes you think, how do they fit it into this box? But those mattress engineers, they're pretty smart. Now, new, in addition to the mattress, Casper also has an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. Because if there's one thing I like about my sheets, it's breathability. So those engineers, they spent thousands of hours developing the Casper mattress. It combines the springy latex and supportive memory foam. That's two kinds of foam. And if you're a frequent Random Trek listener, you know those are my two favorite kinds of foam. And that makes the sleep surface have just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, it's breathable, just like the sheets, so it helps you stay cool and regulate your temperature throughout the night. I am often hot in the evening, so this is really important. Now, regular old mattresses can often cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin-size mattress, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. And I will tell you, the Casper is fit for a king. Now, I know what you're thinking. Internet mattresses. I'm not sure. I don't want to be saddled with this thing if I don't like it. Don't worry. Well, A, you're going to like it. But B, it's completely risk-free. Free delivery and free returns. That's important. Plus, a 100-night home trial. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and you get refunded the entire amount. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it, which is a lot of time. Now, best of all, now the Casper mattress is one of the only mattresses I know that's been named one of the best inventions of 2015 by Time magazine, and it is the most awarded mattress of the decade. I didn't realize they gave out awards to mattresses, but the Casper deserves every single one of them. Best of all, it's made in the good old US of A. Now, if you want to get $50 towards a purchase of any mattress, visit casper.com/trek and use the offer code TREK. Terms and conditions apply. And thank you very much to Casper for helping get Random Trek to 100 episodes. Brett Carter at Halo 3 Master with no E on Twitter says, how do you feel about the staff announced for the new Star Trek series so far? Thanks in advance, Brett. Now, I'm super excited about the new Star Trek series, but I'm going to let you in a little secret here. Random Trek has made me notice things about Star Trek I never noticed before. I was not someone who thought about sets or budgets or that kind of thing before I started looking at these episodes with a critical eye. So I never really noticed that kind of stuff about reusing sets, redressing them, that kind of thing. Always never noticed it. But now I notice it. But I will say one thing that I still pay almost no attention to are the names of the people involved in the production of Star Trek. My apologies to any of you who are listening, although I'm sure none of you are. If you're not, you know, Rick Berman or Gene Roddenberry, chances are I don't know who you are. So honestly, I have no idea how I feel about the staff on the new Star Trek series because I don't really know who they are. I hope that they have picked people who both have a deep abiding love of Star Trek, but also do not feel like they cannot change or expand the scope and meaning of what Star Trek is, because I feel like we don't want the same old Star Trek over and over again. We want to push the boundaries. We want to see a new, exciting, modern take on Star Trek, which is different than the J.J. Abrams take, which I think is new and exciting. But that's kind of, that's a movie take. He's making action movies that have a Star Trek setting. I want a Star Trek series that takes the time to delve into bigger issues and is more than kind of a fun cream puff, but is more of a substantial meal. Jason from the 864 at Jason Barry, at Jason R. Barry on Twitter asks, if you were cast as a guest star on any Star Trek show, what show would it be? And what would you want to play? It's an interesting question. I think that I would probably want to be on Deep Space Nine because it's my favorite series and has the highest hit-to-miss ratio, I think, of any Star Trek series. But what would I want to play? I've given some thought to this. We all know that my physique is not that for someone who is wearing a Starfleet uniform, so I wouldn't force that on anyone. Nobody needs to see me in a skin-set uniform. So, not a Federation officer. I could play a Federation ambassador, because they tend to seemingly like to wear big, long, flowing robes. That's kind of a good look for me, I think. I don't know if I'd want to be a Vulcan, because that's a lot of eyebrowage. And I don't need that. I probably, and I've said this before, if I had to cosplay as a Star Trek alien, I would pick a Klingon because I feel like I'm built like a Klingon. And the makeup, while probably onerous, would be kind of fun. So I think I'd be a Klingon on Deep Space Nine in one of Ronald Moore's infamous Klingon episodes, probably in the background. Much like John Tesh was the Klingon on The Next Generation. So I would be the John Tesh of Deep Space Nine. Listener Patrick at Lemurian, Lemurayim, I don't know how to say that, on Twitter says, what is your favorite Star Trek quote? Well, there's so many great Star Trek quotes, it's hard to pick one. You know, I have been and always will be your friend. That's a great one. Live long and prosper, also said by Spock. Engage, Captain Kirk just doesn't say that. Captain Picard says that. But I think I would pick, it comes from a movie, comes from my favorite Next Generation movie, First Contact, when Alfre Woodard, not even a series regular, says, you broke your little ships, Jean-Luc. And I just love that line. That's the point at which it's, you know, Captain Picard's getting a little crazy in First Contact. He doesn't want to give up. You know, they take whole systems and we fall back. They take whole planets, they fall back. The line must be drawn here. Line, and now, this far, no further. It's very important. He screams and shatters the glass in his ready room with his phaser rifle. And Alfre Woodard defuses it by saying, you broke your little ship. It's a great moment. It's a great performance by both actors. I'd have to pick that as my favorite Star Trek quote. But there's so many to choose from. It's hard to pick one. But I did. So there you go. Now, the next two listener-submitted questions have something in common. Let's see if you can notice what it is.
Hey, Scott. This is Gary from the All Have a Beer and Talk podcast. Congratulations on 100 episodes. I hope to get there myself someday. So, I have a question. Have you ever reconsidered adding the animated series to the mix? I know, but hear me out. Several references to it have popped up in the live-action series, and one episode in particular has pretty much become canon. Yesteryear. Several elements introduced in that story, which reveals a seminal moment in Spock's youth on Vulcan, have been featured and or mentioned in the live-action series, like the city of Shikar, the Forge, and I seem to recall a Saylot running around in an episode of Enterprise. Food for thought? Anyway, here's to at least 100 more episodes of Random Trek.
Hi, Scott. This is Greg Gorman from Tacoma Park, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C., and my question is about the animated series, which you seem to malign more than you do Enterprise. So, besides your usual excuse that it just wasn't available to stream on Netflix, what's your beef with the series, and what canon issues do you have with it?
I gotta say, Gary asked the question much nicer than Greg did. And I apologize for Greg's audio, but, you know, people have different audio setups. So, but I thought it was important to include Greg's question because he went to the effort of submitting it. And clearly, I've sensed with his question that he has strong feelings about the animated series. Here's the honest truth. The animated series isn't very good, and it isn't officially canon, even though there are some things that have its roots in the animated series that show up in various other things. And so I made the decision not to include the animated series. But this is my pledge to you, Random Trek listeners. I am going to watch the entire animated series and assess it again. And maybe I'll change my mind and add it to the rotation. No promises, but I'll watch it and see what I think. Maybe it'll be like Voyager, and it's better than I remember it. Gene McDonald, a guest on a previous episode of Random Trek, has more of a proposition than a comment or question.
Congratulations on the 100th episode of Random Trek. Scott McNulty, you have worked hard, and I think you deserve a vacation. And don't worry about the podcast. I'm here to help out. I'm ready to be the Joan Rivers to your Johnny Carson. Or, more appropriately, the Dr. Pulaski to your Dr. Crusher. Anytime the Random Trek generator spits out a Voyager episode, you can call on me and just take the week off. After all, Voyager is your second least favorite series, and it's my favorite, so why should you suffer? No, seriously, I am longing to return as a guest on Random Trek. It's been ages. I can't believe I have to wait for another 581 episodes, or until you run out of friends and friends of friends and friends of friends of friends. But otherwise, I love this podcast. Keep up the great work.
Now, Gene brings up a good point, and something that people probably didn't even notice, but for the first 99 episodes of Random Trek, I was trying my darndest to not repeat guests. And I think I did that. I had some repeat folks on with remembering Leonard Nimoy when he passed away. And I, of course, repeated the episode that my mom was on because I wanted to, and it's my podcast and I can do what I want. But I've been trying really hard not to repeat guests. Episode 101 is when I am going to break that streak, and I'm having a very special guest back. In fact, my first guest ever will be on episode 101. That is Mr. Jason Snell. So I will be cycling back in some past guests, but still looking for new guests. And one of the things I'm really trying to do, I know a lot of people who listen to Random Trek want to be on Random Trek, which I find to be the highest compliment, that you not only do you listen to this wacky podcast of mine, but you want to participate, which I think is the highest form of compliment anyone can say to a podcast. But I'm trying my darndest to get a diverse set of folks as guests. And I know that some people are like, oh, diversity, why do we need it? Let's not force it. But I think it makes for interesting conversation because I'm a white dude, and it's nice to get other people's opinions who aren't white dudes, and you know, it gives me a new way of looking at something that I have looked at in the same way for a long time. So I'm trying to expand the diversity of my guests and also keep it interesting for folks. So look for more people, and if you have any recommendations for people who would make great guests, let me know. You can even nominate yourself. I know. Something I would never do because of my previously referenced Roman Catholic upbringing. Self-promoters out there, don't be shy. By very definition, you're not. Fellow incomparable panelist and DM on Total Party Kill, Tony Sindelar, at T. Sindelar on Twitter, asks, are there any episodes that haven't come up in the randomizer that you're itching to get to? There are, as a matter of fact. The Trials and Tribulations, the Deep Space Nine episode where they go back in time, and to the Trouble with Tribbles episode of the original series. Fantastic. The Trouble with Tribbles episode of the original series. A classic episode. Also, Chain of Command, which, of course, is when Captain Picard is captured by Cardassians. And there are, in fact, four lights. It's a great episode. All of these episodes I'm looking forward to. Previously mentioned Year of Hell Part 1 and 2 from Voyager. Great episodes. The series finale of Enterprise. I want to talk about that with someone because, man, did that basically ruin the entire series. And that would be something interesting to talk about. And of course, Spock's brain, from the original series will be an interesting and fun topic to have. And now I'm worried that I have mentioned an episode that we've already talked about on Random Trek, but I'm pretty sure those have not been selected yet. So those would be my choices, because why the heck not? Relatedly, Bill Mabry, at Billy Gold, says, I want to share Star Trek with my kids. Do you have any recommendations for good, light episodes to get them started? Well, I think The Trouble with Tribbles is probably an excellent point. Or Trials and Tribulations to get them, or both, to a double feature. The kids, they love Tribbles. Unless they're Klingon children, and then they hate Tribbles. But I'm going to assume, Bill, that you're not, or Billy, I should say, you're not a Klingon. Matt Gemmel, who is at Matt Gemmel on Twitter, also a previous guest on Random Trek, asks, do we think that Starship bathrooms have the three seashells? And he says it with his Scottish accent, so it sounds better than when I say it with my non-specific American accent. Of course, if you don't know what the three seashells are, it's a thing from the Oscar-worthy, that's in sarcastic quotes, movie Demolition Man, starring Sylvester Stallone and Sandra Bullock, America's sweetheart, Sylvester Stallone. And in that, they make reference to the three seashells that the Demolition Man does not know how to use. And so he is defrosted, and he doesn't know how to use these fancy new seashell things in the bathroom. They never really explain what they are. It's just kind of like a ha-ha funny joke. Now, if we were to assume that the three seashells could be found in Starfleet bathrooms, that would mean that Demolition Man was, in fact, part of the Star Trek universe and would be the past. And since I don't think that the franchise wars are part of Star Trek canon, I believe that we can assume safely that you do not find any seashells in bathrooms on starships unless they're there for decorative purposes only. And in fact, in Enterprise, we get glimpses of the bathrooms on the Enterprise, and they seem like pretty normal bathrooms. I do believe some starships have sonic showers, which never seem like they would be very satisfying, and I don't really understand why you'd want a sonic shower when, they don't want to carry around water with them, Scott, but they don't have to carry around water because they have replicators and an unlimited amount of energy, and the technology to convert energy into matter, so you have an unlimited source of water, sometimes Star Trek doesn't make sense. Speaking of which, Amy Lewis has this question.
Hi, Scott. Here's my question. Before Data gets his emotion chip, he always seems to show emotion. When something confusing happens, he always shows it on his face, or surprise, things like that. Was there some episode where they talked about him pretending to do these emotions, sort of like an act to make the other humans feel more comfortable? It sounds familiar, but I can't remember if that actually happened or if that's just how I explain it in my head. Thanks.
Well, Amy, that sounds like a great example of headcanon, which is the things that we explain away in our own head. I'm not sure if there is an episode that delves into Data's programming. I imagine that, I'm vaguely remembering when Lore was first introduced, he talked about how their father made Data more pleasing to humans by mimicking human behavior. So I think that is, in fact, actual canon. It has graduated from your head. Data mimics human reactions in order to avoid the uncanny valley of where something is almost human but not quite, and it just kind of creeps you out. Data is many things. He's not really creepy, which is good because he's a major character. Will Brendel, at Will Brendel on Twitter, says, favorite episode set at least partially on Earth? Mine is Family, TNG, and then Homefront, Paradise Lost, DS9. I have two that pop to mind. The Visitor, which is a Deep Space Nine episode, and the one that we covered on this very show. That's where Jake outlives Benjamin Sisko, and Benjamin pops in and out of existence, and it's a great episode. You should watch it. The other episode that popped into mind for a weird reason is The First Duty, and this is the one where Wesley is hot-dogging with some cadets, and there's a crash, and Tom Paris is in it, but he's not Tom Paris, it's just the same actor. But I like it because one of the old groundkeepers is played by Ray Walston, who also played My Favorite Martian, so how can you not like that? So those are the two that pop into mind as my favorites, as set on Earth at least a little bit. And speaking of Earth, that's something that I hope the new series addresses a little bit. I talked with Tony Sindelar about this, that we know a lot about people who serve in Starfleet, but we don't really know a lot about how people who are just Federation citizens live their lives. Like, do they need jobs? Because there's no money. And once again, you have unlimited energy, and you can turn energy into matter, so nobody has to make anything. So what do people do all day? They study, I guess? And is everybody a scientist, an artist? I don't know. There are some people who aren't very good at either of those things, so what do those people do? It's a question of mine. Post-scarcity economics is interesting. In fact, I think one of my former guests' books, Trekonomics, about that very subject is out now. So go to your local B. Dalton and realize that it's been closed for years, and then go to Amazon and order it there. Drew Saunders at Drew B. Saunders on Twitter says, any Trek make it dusty in the room for you? For me, End of Con, of course, Darmok, and number one, The Inner Light. I'm not a huge teary-eyed watcher. In general, it takes a lot to make me a little weepy. So really, the biggest moment is one that you already talked about, the end of Wrath of Khan. And we all know the scene that... so here's a spoiler alert for Wrath of Khan. Spock dies. For reals. At the scene where he's dying and he's talking to Captain Kirk through the plexiglass, and they can't talk because... they can't touch because if you open the chamber, it'll flood the whole ship with radiation and everyone will die. It gets me every time. I don't even have to see the whole movie. I just watch that scene and I will tear up. I have the odd Hallmark ornament of that moment where you press it and they a couple of lines of dialogue play out, which is just a weird thing to have on a Christmas tree. But when I do that, it gets me a little teary-eyed. So I would say that death scene... maybe the best death scene on film. In fact, it is the best Trek death scene, bar none. And it gets me every time. Every time. Even talking about it, I'm getting a little choked up. Because Spock dies. I don't want Spock to die. Don't die, Spock. Ryan Satterfield, at Ryan Satterfield, asks, any comments about the proposed Enterprise Season 5 ideas, which, of course, never made it to fruition? Nope. I don't have any comments about them. This is the first I had. He included a link. The first I'd ever seen any of them. I think that what I will say is that I'm sorry it didn't get a fifth season, because I feel like the third and fourth season started. Enterprise started to hit its stride. They figured out what it should be, and it was getting good. And just as it was getting good, it was canceled because it wasn't getting good fast enough. So that's my comment on that. Frank Hurst at Frank Hurst asks, in an episode movie you otherwise like, what's your most egregious nitpick slash plot hole? I think that I will talk about the transporter. In almost every episode it is used in. The transporter is this wonderful science fiction idea that they came up with because they wanted to save money and they couldn't afford to show a shuttlecraft going down to the planet every time in the original series, so they came up with the transporter. And in every episode, almost every episode of Star Trek, the transporter can solve a lot of issues. But there's always either people just don't use it, which is crazy, or there's some kind of atmospheric disturbance, which makes it you can't use the transporter, so you have to go around it. So I would say the transporter itself, it's kind of like you read mystery novels before there were cell phones, or you watch Columbo, right? One of my favorite TV murder mystery shows. Nowadays, we've got cell phones, so a lot of plots of Columbo don't make any sense because if you had a cell phone, it would just solve a lot of issues. The transporter is to Star Trek as the cell phone is to Columbo, except that the transporter exists, especially made for Star Trek, and yet they still hamstring it because it is a convenient plot device. So there you go. There's my screed on the transporter. David Rice at Dav Rice on Twitter asks, what episode have you watched that you think showed the most potential but missed the execution? I think that the first episode that popped into my mind is an episode we talked about here on Random Trek. My guest was Michael T. Rose, one of my internet buddies. The episode was TNG's Conspiracy. This is the episode in which an alien race takes over the highest level officers in Starfleet and starts moving stuff around and sending off a signal into space, telling the more aliens to come. And it's very creepy. And then they never do anything with it. So I think that episode was executed fairly well, but they never followed up with it, which I guess is not actually the question you're asking, but that's the first thing that popped into my mind. So that's the answer that you're going to get. Eric Lombardo has his second question, which is, well, how would Kirk have handled the Temerians? I think poorly is probably the answer. The Temerians, of course, Darmok is the episode. They speak in allegory, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. So in many ways, Darmok is an echo of an original series episode, right? The Gorn arena is the episode that Darmok draws almost directly from. It's the same thing. Captain stranded on a planet has to figure out a situation, except in the case of Captain Kirk, he has to beat up a giant lizard thing. And in the case of Captain Picard, he has to try and communicate with someone while also fighting a phase monster. So I feel like to each captain, the situation was ideally suited to their strengths and weaknesses. Joe Rosensteel, Joe Steele on Twitter, and also a fellow incomparable host and panelist, asks, since you love Romulans, what's your favorite Star Trek episode featuring Romulans? I think that there is, I'm sure that people can come up with kind of esoteric episodes featuring Romulans. In the Pale Moonlight is a great episode that features Romulans, but I think you have to go with the classic Balance of Terror, the original series episode that introduces the Romulans, features Mark Leonard as a Romulan commander, and this is, you know, we find out the Federation doesn't know what Romulans look like. They haven't seen them or communicated with them in years. They come across this ship, and they find out, oh, Romulans look like Vulcans. It's a great episode, and probably the best Romulan episode there is. So check out Balance of Terror if you haven't seen it. And one more listener audio submission. And this one I'm a little biased, but it made me smile. So here we go.
Hey, Scott, congratulations on 100 episodes. I'd just like to tell you a little story, because one time I put on Random Trek and I went, squee, what is this happening? What is this? Because one of my favorite culinary writers was sitting right next to you and turned out to be your wife. I've been making her recipes for ages, and now these two people from two different sides of the internet, which I both enjoy, turn out to be married. So that was really funny for me. My question is, what do you snack on while watching your episodes? Do you crack open a jar and dip something into it, or do you have bought stuff, or do you make stuff, or are you very frugal and have a glass of water? What do you eat while watching? Thank you, thank you. Make at least 100 more.
Now, Lana, I will point out, said that Marisa McClellan, who is my wife, is one of her favorite culinary writers. She did not say that I was one of her favorite podcasters, but we'll overlook that. So, little backstory, if you listen to the episode where Marisa was on, you know this, but she is a food writer and a cookbook author, and her area of specialty, or specialization, I should say, is canning. So, pickling, jams, jellies, that kind of thing. If it goes in a jar, she makes it. Our apartment is full of things that she has canned. And the horrible secret is that I do not like pickles or many fruits. So I don't eat jams or jellies, and I don't eat pickles. So I do not snack on either of those things while I'm watching Star Trek. If I am snacking, I am probably having something store-bought, probably from the chip variety, perhaps a pretzel. I live in Pennsylvania. We love our pretzels. I try to drink a lot of water because it's good to stay hydrated, but I must admit I do have an affinity for diet soda. I know it's not good for me, but I need some vices, people, and it's better than Romulan ale. So that's your answer. And here's another audio question from Victor Campos.
Hey, Scott. This is VM Campos, also known as Victor Campos. Congratulations on the 100th episode of Random Trek. It's really one of my favorite podcasts out there. I really enjoy listening to every episode as soon as it comes out. I think I've been listening to it since the very first one. I, too, share your opinion that Deep Space Nine is the best Star Trek of all. And for me, it's also my favorite. And so my question to you is, would you rather be a crew member aboard General Martok's ship or Gul Dukat's ship? Real head scratcher.
Well, I have already said that I think I'd probably dress up like a Klingon and play a Klingon on Deep Space Nine. But that made me forget about the Cardassians. I think the Cardassian uniform would look okay on me. I think there are many older gulls who have a similar heavy set build. So the Cardassian uniform, not a problem. The problem, though, of course, is that Gul Dukat is crazy. So you don't want to work for Gul Dukat. So I would pick General Martok right off the bat and be a Klingon and serve on his ship, because I don't want to serve on a ship of a crazy man, even though I really like Gul Dukat, but he's crazy. All right, we have one more Twitter question. Well, actually two, but they're basically the same question. LJ Waves at LJ Waves asks, maybe previously answered, it wasn't, but what are your top three episodes on each series and why? Yes, even Enterprise. And David Rice at Dev Rice writes, what's your favorite episode of all time? So these are related. I took a moment, well, several moments to try to figure out the answer. Let's go through my answers for favorite episodes by series. So the original series, I will do three because that's what I was asked for. And these are not in a particular order. The Corbinite Maneuver, which is a great example of Captain Kirk solving a problem like only Captain Kirk does by lying to a young child who is actually not a young child. And this also features the puppet that is displayed at the end of many Star Trek episodes, which is kind of freaky. So it's a great episode. And also the remastered version on the Blu-ray is beautiful. Now, you can't talk about favorite original series episodes without bringing up, which is probably the best episode of Star Trek ever. And, you know, this is not something new. This is not going to be mind-blowing to people. The City on the Edge of Forever, quintessential Star Trek viewing, and is, I think it stands on its own. If you haven't seen The City on the Edge of Forever, you should stop listening to this podcast and go watch The City on the Edge of Forever. And then, of course, another episode that is quintessential Star Trek viewing and laid the groundwork for many a great episode in other series, Mirror Mirror, in which our protagonists find out that there is a mirror-like alternate universe where there are evil versions of themselves, including a goateed Mr. Spock. So come for the goatee, stay for the agony booth. Oh, and a bonus one is the original series is known for kind of message episodes, and one that is my favorite message episode is Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. That includes the aliens that have one half of the aliens have black on one side of their face and white on the other, and the other half have it reversed, and they hate each other because of that, and it is, I think, a not too subtle allegory on racism. And it includes Frank Gorshin, who plays the Riddler on the 1960s Batman. So that's always fun. That takes us to The Next Generation. So yesterday's Enterprise, where we meet the Enterprise C, and it has, you know, fallen through a hole in time, basically, and Tasha Yar is there. Everybody freaks out. It's a great episode, and all about sacrifice and time travel. The Inner Light, in which Captain Picard lives an entire life inside of an alien probe in the course of an episode and learns how to play the Rysikon flute, is fantastic television and one of those episodes that I think about time and time again. And this is kind of my outsider pick because I didn't just want to pick episodes that everyone always picks. So Lower Decks, which is one of the episodes that doesn't focus on the characters that we know and love, but focuses on ensigns up to hijinks and hoping that they can get promoted. So I like it a lot. That brings us to Deep Space Nine. And I had trouble picking just three Deep Space Nine episodes. So in fact, I picked four. because I could do that. Whispers, in which Miles O'Brien's clone freaks out. And we don't think that it's a clone until the very end. And then he dies. It's a very heart-wrenching episode. And sets up many indignities that the writers place on Miles O'Brien throughout the run of DS9. Poor Miles. Duet, which is a first season episode, which I think is fantastic, and includes a character who wants to, let's say he's a little off, and he thinks that he is this infamous war criminal, but in fact, he is not. Dr. Bashir, I presume, is an episode of Deep Space Nine that we find out a little bit more about Dr. Bashir and a controversy in his past. And I've talked about this episode of Deep Space Nine ad infinitum, as they say in Latin. But In the Pale Moonlight is an episode that I think really it sums up everything that's great with Deep Space Nine. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it. This is one of these episodes that perhaps some people will say is not very Star Trek-y, but I think it is. Watch it. Brings us to Voyager. Now, Voyager, I had a little harder of time picking some episodes, so I will pick actually two-parters, and I'll count them as one. Year of Hell, which I've talked about already on this podcast, and Equinox, in which the Voyager meets the USS Equinox, which is another stranded Federation ship, and wacky things ensue. Also, echoes of, or portents of what will happen in Battlestar Galactica. So another point in my crazy argument about Voyager being Battlestar Galactica. And finally, for Voyager at least, Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy, which is just a fun episode. Any episode that is features the Doctor is good in my book, and this one is a lot of fun, so check it out. And that brings us to what is probably the most difficult of assignments, Enterprise. Now, I will admit, I have not seen every episode of Enterprise. I don't remember many episodes of Enterprise, so I'm going to only pick two episodes, which happen to be a two-parter, In a Mirror Darkly. And this is the episodes in which they go and find the Mirror Mirror universe, and Captain Archer actually has some personality. It is great. It's a lot of fun. And they even change the theme song for these episodes, so you know I'm going to like it. Now, our final audio question comes from Dan and Penelope. It's a little long, but hang in there.
To celebrate the 100th episode of Random Trek, Scott wants to know if we have any questions for him. Do you have any questions for him?
My favorite part of Skyquack is this secret wheel. So he gets by Hank and says, no man gone to Floyd.
Where no man has gone before. What part about, did you say a secret wheel? I don't know what that is.
Oh, remember the wheel spot sawdust?
Oh, are you talking about where they have the ship wheel that's on the Enterprise?
Mm-hmm.
It's in that one room they go to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be in Star Trek V.
Uh-huh.
Is that your favorite Star Trek?
Yeah.
What is it that you like about Star Trek V?
I like the killer case. My favorite killer case is Captain Kirk.
Captain Kirk? I thought Spock was your favorite character.
Oh, Spock, you're my favorite killer case. Is Spock somewhere at his home?
Are you talking about Scott?
Yeah.
You're saying Spock, but I think you mean Scott. It's very easy to confuse them.
I said Spock.
I know you said Spock, but I'm talking about Scott McNulty, who hosts the Star Trek podcast.
Yeah, but why? Where is Spock's home?
Spock's home is the planet Vulcan.
I've never been there.
Well, you've never been there because it's pretend?
Huh?
It's just pretend for the show. Star Trek is made up. It's not real.
So, when can I go to Spock's planet?
Well, we can't go to Spock's planet because it's pretend. It doesn't exist in real life.
Is it somewhere? When can I go to Mars?
Oh, well, Mars, you're young enough that maybe in your lifetime you'd be able to go to Mars.
Maybe I could pretend I'm going to Mars. I can make a box into a spaceship.
We could definitely pretend that. We could go find a box and do that. I wonder if Scott would like to go to Mars.
Uh-huh.
That's our question for Scott, because Penelope wants to go to Mars.
Come on, let's call him. Spock, would you like to go to Mars?
Scott, not Spock.
Scott, would you like to go to Mars?
Okay, so that's our question for Scott, and we'll see what he has to say about it.
Dad.
Oh my goodness.
I have an idea.
Excuse me.
Spock, I'm going to make a big, we're going to find a big bot to make a big space up for you, and then we can find a small bot so me can build a space up for me. And then one for Dad and Mom and Dylan Connie. You never met Dylan and Connor.
No, Scott's never met Dylan and Connor. Well, so we're going to have to go find a lot of boxes because we're going to have to make a very big pretend spaceship. So that's the idea. So Scott is going to come to our house and get in our pretend spaceship. We're all going to go to Mars together if he wants to come. You know what?
He could
bring Marisa with him, and she and Mom could do some canning in the kitchen while we're all pretending to go to Mars.
Yeah.
So everybody will have something to do. It'll be great. So our question for Scott is, if you could go to Mars, if they'd figured out the technology and all that, would you want to go to Mars for some period of time? If it took, you know, however long it takes to get there, would you want to go there and check it out?
So, Spock, have you been on a boat before?
You want to know? First of all, you need to say Scott, because that's his name.
Scott, have you been on a boat before?
Okay, so Scott will tell us maybe if he's been on a boat before.
Congratulations,
Scott.
Scott, on 100 episodes. Scott, have you eaten cheese crackers?
Penelope, don't worry. People confuse me for Spock all the time. I think it's the ears. To answer your questions, I would be happy to come to your house and go into a box rocket ship to Mars. Although I don't know if we could actually get to Mars. If I had the opportunity to actually not pretend to go to Mars, I probably would take it because it seems like it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Although Marisa would miss me, but if I could bring Marisa with me, then I would definitely be on board. I have been on a boat. I haven't been on many boats. Ferries, I think, count as boats. So I've been on a couple of ferries to Staten Island, Staten Island Ferry, and the one to the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island. I also rode a boat in the Schuylkill River here in Philadelphia. It was a horrible experience, but I did it. So I've been on the boats a few times. I've never been on a ship, which is, a ship is like a boat, only it's bigger. I think, hopefully, nautical enthusiasts out there will correct me if I'm wrong about that. And finally, yes, I have eaten Ritz Bits cheese crackers. They are delicious, and I wish I were eating some right now. And there you have it, folks. The 100th episode of Random Trek has come to an end. I want to thank you again for listening to Random Trek every week. I am still surprised that people listen. I'm even more surprised that people are listening to this episode because I'm the only person on it. So I feel like people come to listen to the guest, and I am just the happy conduit to get the interesting guests into your ear holes. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. That's a LeVar Burton Reading Rainbow sign off for you.